Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. My name is Jonathan Allred, and I am with Cornell University. Today I'm going to talk a bit about microgreens. So, microgreens are an increasingly popular crop with today's greenhouse growers. They stand developmentally between a sprout and baby leaf green and are a vegetable or herb that is harvested shortly after emergence of the first true leaf or leaves, but prior to true leaf development and senescence of the cotyledons. One of the drivers for growers to start producing these crops is their high value. This ranges between roughly $65 and $110 per kilogram of fresh weight, which can be highly incentivizing as a supplementary income source. They are, however, a protected cultivation crop due to their sensitivity. So most production systems you will find are concentrated in hoop house, greenhouse, or plant factory environments. Their cultivation has been increasing in recent years, and although their scale does not warrant a piece of the pie from the National Agricultural Statistics Service, we can use other metrics to gauge their growth, such as number of academic publications, grower interest, and product offerings. These are just a few examples of some publications that have been done that lay foundational research that others have built upon. So this work was conducted in controlled environment chambers consisting of a series of mini environmental chambers. This was constructed as a full factorial design consisting of three species, arugula, mizuna, and mustard garnet giant, each nested within four mini chambers. DLI was controlled in walk-in chambers, while the CO2 was controlled in the mini chambers. The experiment consisted of four DLI by four CO2 concentrations, with a total of 12 replications per treatment combination per species and three experimental replications over time. As you can see in this image, we are inside one main walk-in chamber consisting of two mini environmental chambers, each containing a 12-cell flat of each species. So in conducting these experiments, we were interested in six parameters, five of which I'll talk about today. Fresh weight, dry weight, number of days from seeding to harvest, total flavonoids and phenolics were evaluated for their responses to DLI, CO2, and their potential interactions. On the bottom is a picture just after harvest where arugula is on the left, mizuna is in the center, and mustard is on the right. Now these crops were chosen due to their presence in local markets, diversity in sensory attributes, and similarity in number of days from seeding to harvest. And this is important because this was statistically modeled to be a representative population of microgreens within the Brassicaceae family. So why is all of this important? Well, because light and CO2 are drivers of biomass production, which directly affect yields and potential profits. So although we are on this beautiful island, in shorts and flip-flops, most of us, minus formal attire, we all know that most of the world is not so constant. For example, where I am from, in Ithaca, New York, the weather is often gloomy, and in the winter months, the days are quite short, making for less total accumulated light per day. This is graphically represented in this slide, where you can clearly see the bell-shaped curve associated with our latitude, but you can also see the immense variability across the year. So when producing a crop, this makes keeping a consistent DLI impossible without a shade and lighting control system. But the capital costs associated with even the most rudimentary lighting system can be a hurdle for growers. So if a grower can't control their light, or can, but wants to minimize their electrical usage, CO2 has been shown in numerous crops to not only increase yields, but act as a buffer to augment lower DLIs while still achieving the same yield. In addition, stress factors, particularly the high light levels, promote the production of secondary metabolites, which have been gaining popularity, gaining all the rage with today's health-conscious consumers. So the first factor that I want to touch on, and certainly the most important for growers, is fresh weight. For changes in DLI, arugula responded much differently than mizuna and mustard, which were not significantly different from each other. It had the steepest slope of the three, and the only to exhibit a quadratic response. Total yield per square meter increased by nearly 650 grams, jumping 61% between the lowest and highest DLI. Now, mizuna and mustard also increased, but did so in a linear fashion, with a slope that was less than that of arugula. For example, mustard increased by just over 440 grams per square meter, while mizuna increased by just over 330 grams per square meter, as DLI increased from 3 to 12 moles per square meter per day. However, for all three species, there was no significant difference in the responses to changes in CO2 concentration. For arugula, mizuna, and mustard, yields increased by an average of 170 grams, or about 11%, as CO2 concentrations increased from ambient 400 to 1,000 parts per million. What is interesting is that even in these very early stage crops, we can see that a CO2 concentration of 1,000 parts per million can be substituted for between 2 and 4 moles of light while still achieving the same fresh weight. The pictures on this slide are of arugula, where A is at 3 moles and C is at 12 moles. CO2 concentrations are then ordered left to right from 400 to 1,000 parts per million. So with the exception of arugula, dry weight increased in a very similar fashion to that of fresh weight for its responses to both DLI and CO2. In the case of arugula, the response to DLI was expressed linearly as compared to the quadratic model for fresh weight. Responses for mizuna and mustard to DLI remained linear, but not significantly different from each other. Much like fresh weight, dry weight for all three species increased by an average of 13% as CO2 concentrations increased from 400 to 1,000 parts per million, with no significant difference between them. Now, the number of days from seeding to harvest was another parameter that we looked at with particular implications for growers. While CO2 has shown that it can significantly increase both fresh and dry weight yields, it did not have an effect on the development rate and subsequent days to harvest of either arugula, mizuna, or mustard. For days to harvest, the only parameter that had a significant effect was DLI, which responded in a negative linear fashion for arugula and a negative quadratic fashion for mizuna and mustard. As DLI increased from 3 to 12 moles per square meter per day, all three species became harvestable 2 days sooner, a benefit for growers looking to maximize their number of harvests per year. Now, totophenolic compounds have been overwhelmingly praised for the health-promoting benefits they impart on the human body when ingested. This is because in plant-derived food products, phenolic compounds constitute the majority of antioxidant compounds, which have been linked to reductions in various chronic diseases of humans, such as cancers and cardiovascular diseases. Now, the results I obtained are quite interesting because they appear to support this populist idea that microgreens are more nutritious than their mature counterparts. For all three species, total phenolic content represented in milligrams of gallic acid equivalents for 100 grams of fresh weight tissue increased in a linear fashion as DLI increased from 3 to 12 moles per square meter per day. Additionally, for all three species, there was an interaction between DLI and CO2 where concentrations, CO2 increased, the effect of DLI increased from 400 to 1,000 parts per million. However, CO2 on its own did not have a significant effect on total phenolics. Among three species, arugula had the greatest total phenolic content, but was the least influenced by changes in DLI. Although these results showed, for example, that arugula had about the same total phenolic content as mature arugula at 105 milligrams, this was obtained at just 12 moles per square meter per day and 1,000 parts per million. In comparison, mature arugula with roughly the same total phenolic content was grown at a DLI of over 20 moles at an ambient CO2 concentration. So although this model does not permit an extrapolation to a value as high as 20 moles, other supporting literature have investigated the effects of DLI values as high as 30 moles while still seeing a significantly positive response. Total flavonoid content for all three species increased linearly as DLI increased from 3 to 12 moles per square meter per day. Unlike total phenols, CO2 had no significant effect on flavonoid content of either of the three species. However, similarly to phenolics, arugula's flavonoid content response was significantly different from Mizuna and mustard, containing the highest level of flavonoids at the lowest level of light, Mizuna and mustard had the greatest total flavonoid content. So as we conclude, one of the questions that has been left unanswered involves the economic feasibility of these various inputs. What still needs to be done is to evaluate the cost-to-benefit ratio of lighting and CO2 supplementation in various growing environments. Unfortunately, this is not quite as simple as modeling a microgreen production facility, as those rarely exist in pure form. Instead, most share space with other types of crops whose responses may or may not warrant an investment in lighting or CO2 systems. Of course, side benefits associated with the addition of higher light and CO2 should also be considered. As a grower, potentially being able to market based on a quantifiable nutrient claim could further to fuel sales. The tendency for there to be no significant difference in the responses to Mizuna and mustard, while both were consistently and significantly different from arugula, could be due to the fact that Mizuna and mustard share the same genus, which is different from that of arugula. This could help serve growers in making predictions about values, responses of microgreens that they have yet to try. Finally, although I have no formal comment on the use of plant factories, microgreens' low light requirement, significant response to CO2, elevated CO2, short cultivation period, and high value make them a potentially feasible crop for plant factory environments. With that, I will conclude and invite you to ask any questions you may have at that time. This time. Thank you. There's a question in the back. For the total phenolics, I use the Follin ketol phenol chlorometric method, yes. It was fluorescence, T5s. The highest that we've done with recording is the 12. So the other literature has been done on much higher, as there's some going up to 30. But one of the reason why we chose to go lower is that, especially in the area that we're from, light is a limiting factor. And so most growers don't want to invest in lighting systems. And so, an ambient, a day of, winter month, you can get 4 moles of light and that's it. And could be a nice day. So it's just, we wanted to look at those lower light levels. Yes. They were different light intensities over the same photo period. The photo period was 14 hours. We didn't look at increased photo periods. We were looking at the short days, especially for the winter months, to represent what growers would be dealing with in their environments. No. So the 1,000 parts per million was as high as we went in these experiments, due to experimental design restrictions, from the, equipment standpoint. But, I would say that especially if you're in a greenhouse environment, once you start getting above 1,000 parts per million, especially in any sort of, small greenhouse operation, very difficult to control that level, and it questions the economic return on that. I know for lettuce, they can go up to about 1,600, and then you start having a lot of, no return on investment becomes an issue. All right. Yes. So the, let me go back to the mini chambers. So we had separate controls of cooling systems. We have, the main chamber here. What is clicking? The main chamber here, the light cap has its own separate cooling environment, and these mini chambers have their own cooling system involved. So we were able to maintain temperatures within both those environments and keep it at, I believe it was 23 degrees C. Okay, that looks like it.